I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Tony Rose. Tony is a tax accountant by trade, but counselor to many of his clients on issues related to his concepts of five capitals, which is the theme of his second book, Five Eyes on the Fence. He believes that any person or company should concentrate on far more than money to be successful. Tony, it's great to have you on again. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, David.
So you were Smashing the Plateau on episodes 52 and again on episode 171. And in our last two episodes, we talked about what prevents people from making the changes they need for their companies to thrive, and also how community experiences can revolutionize a business and one's perspective as a leader. And I wondered if we could start off this episode by talking about what actually can help companies smash the plateau and be successful. What have you seen successful companies do to smash the plateau that others aren't doing?
Companies that are very successful and sustain that success, in my mind, are the companies that keep their promises to their different constituencies. And what I mean by constituencies is there is more than just your customer involved in your business. It's not only your customer or client, it is your employees. It is your vendors. It is the other people in your industry. And these companies that constantly keep their promises to those different constituencies tend to be the ones that excel and make money.
What might be a good story to help listeners understand why this is so important?
I'll use one having to do with me. Our company, or at least my aspect of our company, prepares taxes. Every time you prepare taxes, someone is worried about a number of things. Not only how much time it takes to get it done and when it's going to get done, but how much trouble you put the client through in getting the information prepared. And oftentimes people like me make promises about when we're going to deliver a tax return. Just that simple. When you make a promise to deliver something and you violate that promise, you are violate a piece of trust, and you're actually eroding the trust that you have with your customer. To the contrary, or as opposed to meeting that promise or beating that promise and in effect delighting your client. When you delight your client, it's pretty hard to lose it. It's a client is not looking for the cheapest solution. If you are meeting all the promises you make with regard to your product or service that you're delivering. So meeting your promises is a client retention tool. So that's one obvious example. Another example might have to do with participating in an industry association where you are active and you make promises about your performance with regard in that association. And then people see how you perform. And then when a customer or client comes to a person in that industry that they can't take care of, you become on top of their mind. And they refer you to help meet that need that they can't meet because you've shown yourself to be invaluable in keeping your promises. Keeping your promises is everything.
Yeah, it really is important. And what about to employees?
This is such a fluid area. And I admit my own confusion as there's, two or three different strata and generations of employees in the workforce. What is meaningful to people that are baby boomers, or whatever that next generation down would be, is not important to what millennials. So if you're going to make a promise to an employee about something, let's take something as simple as listening to their suggestions. One needs to actually sit down and listen. One actually needs to talk about, as if they're actually interested, and they should be, about what that suggestion means and what the implications could be and how not only would it affect your business, but how it affects other employees. And actually address it specifically. I just walked out of the office of one of my youngest partners in my firm, and we were talking about telling the truth to one another. We were talking about understanding what her vision was for the future of our enterprise, and whether her vision for the future and my vision for the future are compatible and can overlap, and how would you have to change your attitudes, each of us, to come to a common vision that propels our company forward. I'm kind of at the end of my career because I'm kind of an old guy. She's at the beginning of her career. She's very young. She's in her 30s. How do you bridge those gaps? And you do it simply by listening and actually not immediately thinking that somebody's wrong or missed it or not had experience. That's probably not the right way. But also one has to be honest and not say I'm listening and then not listen, because they catch you in a lie all the time.
And was this conversation with a young partner one that was planned to be about vision for the company?
I am always thinking strategically for our company. A lot of our partners have to think tactically because they're in charge with seeing that the actual work gets done. And I feel responsible for that as well. But I am not tactically responsible for seeing that things happen. So I'm always thinking strategically. So I just happen to be thinking, I actually happen to think about choices, the issue of choices and keeping promises. It is not, all of us have the power to make or not make a commitment. I used an example with you when we were talking before we did the podcast that I've promised to come out and see you in New York. And actually, I would really like to, but I've broken those promises to you. I could have said, you know what? I don't get to New York very often. It's highly unlikely I'm ever going to be spending time with you in New York. I could have told you the truth, but I didn't actually do that. I apologize for breaking my micro promise to you. But these are the kind of promises that all of us make to a lot of people every day. What I'm trying to do in the last 6 months or so, since this has been pointed out to me by a professor by the name of Suzanne Peterson from Arizona State University, is I'm going to try means that you're not going to do. I am going to be aware of the promises I'm making to people, and then I'm going to calendar it, and I am going to act on those promises. And I'm going to feel about the choice I made to make those promises and feel good that it affirms my values, or I'm not going to make the promises at all. And that's kind of what I was discussing with my partner, Shana, this morning. And it got into the broader context of the future of our firm and the future of our lives together, you know, as a business.
Right. So what strikes me in this story, a couple of points. One is you mentioned that you're in the later part of your career, and here you are trying to make changes to make yourself a better leader with regard to being aware of what you're promising and how you're going to fulfill on those promises, even very small ones, which is really commendable. I just want to remark on it.
Thank you very much. That's very nicely said. And when I record this podcast, when it airs, I will make sure that I get that quote from you. It's really good. And I'll put it on my mirror. I don't, as an older worker, I have a choice. I choose not to be done. But choosing not to be done carries with that a responsibility. And that responsibility is not to be static, not to stay the same. You can be older and be changed. You can be younger. And it's easier to change because it's required. It just happens. But when you're at my stage, and I'm in my 60s, I can choose to try to play it and be the same that I've been. It's worked in the past, but boy, it's not stimulating ultimately. In fact, it's kind of boring. So changing stimulates me. It's kind of like watching the next episode of the Game of Thrones. You never know what's going to happen, but you know things are going to change.
That's true. And changing is not necessarily the easier path.
No. In fact, it's incredibly uncomfortable because you're moving from a point of stasis. And for someone who's an older person, that stasis more or less has worked, or at least you're settled for it. And now you're moving into some kind of growth that creates at least a modicum of discomfort. I was talking to one of my coaches yesterday, whose name is Michelle DeAngelis. And we were talking about, have I really created my life so that I'd be comfortable? And has that been my goal, or has it been to grow? And sometimes I'm scared that I try to create my life to be comfortable. But in reality, the most rewarding, most exciting, the most passionate a thing is when you're in a growth pattern and when you're with people with who's growing. I think we talked in the first episode about people with batteries included and people not without batteries included. When you're in a community of people that are also in a state of growth, there's a lot of dynamic energy that you catch from people. It's really fun.
It's fun. It's very powerful. And I love what you just said. I'm scared of creating my life to be comfortable.
Well, and I've done that. I plead guilty on many counts, though people may not have noticed that because I hide it really well. At the same time, I'm seeking to be around people that push me to grow, because otherwise, if I'm not growing, why do they want to be around me? Being around people that think they need to grow helps you think you need to grow as well. Got to get help wherever you can.
Absolutely. And the other thing that struck me about what you said with the encounter with the younger partner is that this was not a planned discussion. It sounds to me like you took the time to listen to your partner's concerns and address them, even though they were part of a significant conversation, kind of ad hoc.
Yeah. One of the terms that came up in that discussion was the term elephant in the room. And as you know, my first book is called Say Hello to the Elephants. And I think it's really important that we expose those things that we never talk about, but everyone knows exists.
Right. So part of that, what I'm hearing is not just being aware of those elephants, but taking time out that is unplanned to deal with them when they come up.
Yeah. You know what? That really is true. I haven't thought about it that way, David. But it is so true that it's like in a family. There's topics that you don't bring up, or you're around the dinner table and you say a word or a name or something, and everyone just kind of shuts up and changes the subject. I think that happens in our businesses.
Yeah. And then it comes back to choice. We have a choice to either keep our mouths closed and move on so we don't get into that place of discomfort, or to make a choice to spend some time talking about what's uncomfortable and the elephant that's in the room.
The other thing about our choices, I spent some time with a man whose name is Sean Stevenson. I don't know if you know who he is.
He's been a guest on Smashing the Plateau.
Oh, Sean. Okay. So you know Sean.
I know Sean. The world is small.
The world is very small. And so Sean is a proponent of neurolinguistic programming, and he was talking to me, and I had heard this term 10 or 15 years ago about being at effect or at cause. And when you make a choice, you are being at cause. You are causing something to happen. Now, oftentimes what we do is we spin out and we say, oh, I'm sorry I made the choice, or I made the choice and the result that's come out is not what I expected. And that happens. But you know what? I glory in the fact that I've made a choice. When I keep a promise, when I make a commitment, and I keep that commitment, even if it's painful, even if I kind of say, oh, I should have maybe done something else, I give myself credit for making the choice and for then honoring that value that the choice is a witness to. So many people live a world of regret. So many business owners either let the business run them or let someone else run their business, and then they complain. By the way, I'm a professional complainer. I love it. But the reality is that when you make choices and you suffer and or benefit from the consequences of those choices, you are completely liberated. You are completely free. And owning a business and running a business where you are completely free can't get any better. Just can't. I don't know where I went with that, but you know, that's where I'm.
So for those people who are running a business where they are completely free, what are some of the things they're doing that others aren't? And I want to talk specifically about learning and growing.
Okay. So what are they doing? Well, they're learning and growing. They're belonging to places like Vistage or the Strategic Coach Program or being part of the Genius Network or getting education at Harvard in the Executive Training Program. They are in a constant state of information gathering about themselves, about their industry, about subjects of leadership. These people never stop learning. So that's number one. Number two, they're spending a lot less time worried about money and a lot more time worried about the four other capitals that I discuss in my book, namely their humanness, their human capital, their social capital, their relationships, their intellectual capital, what it is that they deliver of value to their clients that's smart. And the fourth is their structural capital, how they deliver their product and how they design their relationships within their business from a process standpoint. Those four elements, whether they're working on them consciously because they've read my book or they've read these same concepts in other books, or they've just done it innately, are things that they're worrying about. Money squeezes out once you're taking care of those other four items. And if you look carefully at really successful people, you'll see that they pay attention to those things as well. That I believe that's what they do. That's what they do. The people that stagnate are the people that are unintentional about running their business. They just have a job. They might be making a lot of money, but they just have a job. And slowly, you can't create a trajectory that continues to go upwards if you're not thinking about those four things, and at least three of those four things fairly actively.
And how does this drive to always be learning and growing and be focused on the four non-financial capitals, how does that permeate everything inside the company?
Well, it starts with the communication. It is incumbent upon an owner, if they're just not in cruise control, to make sure that people in the organization know what's important. It's actually important for them to be able to explain that to their vendors as well as their customers. So we talked earlier at the beginning of this about our constituents.
Right.
It's incumbent upon them to communicate with their constituencies and understand that they have it. Businesses or business owners that say, oh, I've got my chair and I've got a great product and I'm just going to offer it to the world and I have no further obligation. Just pay me and everyone else shut up. Don't last for long, because invariably there will be valleys. There will be things that don't work. And unless you're aware not only that something's not working, but what about it is not working, and think about it in terms of these four capitals, you can't fix anything. And then you're just gambling. And businesses that gamble long term, always seven out for any of you listening that play crap. So business leaders that are constantly growing, get new information, try to overlay that on what they're doing in their companies, I think are in a better position to create this ever ascending trajectory of their business. Might even be a little circular, David, at times, but it's ascending, mm-hmm. not declining.
And are you also saying, Tony, that what these leaders are doing is creating a culture of learning and listening inside the company?
Yes, and they may not even be aware of it. The one thing I know about my company is that I don't know everything. And people around me actually might know some stuff that I don't. And I try to create a model in my mind of what would it be like if I did what they said I should do. My young partner, I hope, is going to come back to me with what she believes my role in the company should be in the next 10 years. I really want to be open to that and not listen and hear in my head, oh, no, that could never happen, or that's not smart, or that's not good. I want to hear what she thinks the possibilities are. And then hopefully I'll be open enough to adapt my thinking to what her concept of the possibilities are. She's got 40 years left in my company. If I don't listen to that, that's stupid. Just plain stupid.
That's pretty powerful. So now turning to someone else, Tony, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job of smashing the plateau?
There's several people that I've met through my relationship with Joe Polish at something called the Genius Network, which is a mastermind group for entrepreneurs. And I've actually been very impressed with them. It's kind of the new seasoning in my life, these people. One of which, by the way, Sean Stevens, who we talked about earlier, very, very smart. Very, very smart indeed, and with a life experience that none of us have ever had. There is a woman who's a Canadian woman by the name of Adi, I think you would pronounce it Kuju. She is the owner of a company called Working Against Gravity that is a innovative nutrition counseling company that is all on the cloud, all on the web, that counsels people about how to eat a healthier life and be in better conditioning. Originally born out of the CrossFit community, but something that's actually even applicable to me that I've decided to go on her program. I've been very successful. I'm much healthier than the last time I talked to you because of her. And she's very creative about how she's delivering her product and service to her customers, including how they keep their promises. One thing that she's doing, by the way, David, is that she said that we are going to be quiet. We are not going to answer any emails or pay any attention to anything on Saturdays. Everyone connected to Working Against Gravity is going to be quiet and do a free day, to do a refresher day and recharge their batteries. She's announced it to her customers, so we know what to expect. She's brilliantly simple, this woman. There's also another very interesting person I met whose name is Michael Burnoff, who is does a lot in communication and leadership training. And what is striking to me about him is not only how successful he's been in his own business in doing this kind of leadership consulting, but also he's got this, I don't know what you would call it, David, ethos about taking a percentage of everything he earns and putting it away in other non-associated endeavors so that he is making money while he sleeps. And I've been impressed by someone at his stage in life and his age being so smart about that kind of stuff. You could listen to people like him and learn a lot and liberate yourself a lot earlier in life than I liberated myself. So those are three people.
Those are great examples. And Tony, what do we have to look forward to from you in the near future? What's coming up?
What is coming up for me is I'm actually thinking about doing some more live speaking related to the four capitals and talking about issues like micro promises and the power of choice. I think it'd be kind of fun for me to do it. And so I'm going to be trying to do some more of that. I'm going to be continuing to improve myself by learning new and different technologies from people like Michael Burnoff, from Sean Stevenson, from all the other stuff. And of course, I'm going to continue to pursue, because I never fail to mention, my pursuit of learning more about the Kolbe system, which we've talked about in prior episodes, and doing things with the strategic coach and Dan Sullivan, because I would drop everything else in my life and still continue to be part of the strategic coach program.
Sounds great. Well, that's a lot of learning and growing that you've just described. So we've come full circle.
Yeah.
Tony, how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Currently, I do have a blog that gets updated from time to time, probably not as often as I should, which is at Blogspot. It's called What We Should Be Doing, all one word, .blogspot.com. There is pages of information and stuff, something called Tony's Corner at our website called rsjcpa.com. That's Rose Snyder and Jacobs, rsjcpa.com. And I am going to be trying to up my social media, my social communication on Twitter and Facebook and things like that. And that would be at TARCPA. In both places, TARCPA.
Sounds great. Well, Tony, thanks so much for coming back again to be with us on Smashing the Plateau. It's been a great discussion about learning, growing, promises, choices, all important ways to smash the plateau. So thank you so much. My guest today has been Tony Rose, partner in the accounting firm Rose, Snyder & Jacobs. Thank you again, Tony, for joining us.
Thank you, David. I enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.